So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 73. Hope you enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Jyn Erso. As always, I'm Mikey, and I'm joined by my co-host, Ben.
Hello. It's just me.
I know, it's just you.
This is crazy. You want to,
I know, right? Like, last week was just Caitlin, and Danya this week, her power went out. Like,
we're taking turns.
That's right. Danya's power went out like 10 minutes ago. It was really funny. She's like, I can't be on. Anyway, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at Our Radio Podcast, leave a comment on our Facebook page, send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest audiobook for free today, including all the great Star Wars audiobooks. Including right now, I just finished listening to Inferno Squad, and there's some really cool stuff in that book. If you haven't read it, feel free to listen to it by getting that free trial. Also, we have a couple new books coming out soon, including the Phasma book, which will be coming out just before The Last Jedi, and we're going to talk about that book today. We have also launched our Patreon. Check it out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Some perks include our Discord chat where you can chat to us throughout the week. Join in on the recording studio as you hear us live and all the mistakes that I make. Movie nights and After Dark episodes, where our next movie night and After Dark episode will be taking place in the last week of August. We haven't settled on an exact date or time yet, but that will be happening soon. The first After Dark episode is up available to everyone, not just Patreons. So you can go to our Patreon website, patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast, and download that. Take a listen to it. It's a 20-minute episode called Potter Wars, where we discuss Star Wars 40th and Harry Potter's 20th. And we talk about the similarities between the two stories and journeys. And I may reach a little bit too far. But if you can't afford to... support us on Patreon. We also have merchandise for sale on our website. Check out the t-shirts as well as button packs are available on our website. So check those out. But Ben, I think it's time for the news.
It is totally time for the news.
So this first bit of news I found really interesting. It comes from... Was it... Entertainment Weekly, I believe it was. Apparently my link I had here doesn't work.
I think so. Yeah,
it comes from Movie Pilot. But apparently,
oh, okay. Hold on, let me go pull it up.
Yeah, so it comes from Movie Pilot, and what happens is apparently George Lucas still has a say in the Star Wars films. So what's basically happening is apparently George Lucas and Kathleen Kennedy are obviously really good friends. You know, they've been friends for a long time. And what happened is, apparently, he still has, he advises on the films, which is pretty cool. So I think this is pretty cool. So he basically, to give you a little recap, if you didn't, back in 2012, George Lucas sold Lucasfilm to Disney, and he kind of was like, I'm done. Kathleen Kennedy took over Lucasfilm, which was what George kind of wanted. And before The Force Awakens, he had kind of panned a whole, sequel trilogy that Lucasfilm and basically J.J. Abrams said, no, we're going to take bits and pieces and kind of go their own way. But the nice part is George actually still has the ear for very specific things that he has things. So the exact quote is, he'll whisper in my ear every now and then, usually on something specific or important to him, like about Jedi training and things like that. So this is really cool that basically you have George Lucas still having, a little bit of say when it comes to, Star Wars, because, he created it. So I'm all for George Lucas, being able to do something like that. I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I'm glad he's still being included, because, one thing I definitely think, maybe, I would hope that people are in agreement with this, but, I really like the story of the prequels, but I don't think they're executed particularly well, and to have him still kind of there to help with the world, which I think he's, obviously he built himself, but just to still be present for all that stuff is really important. I don't know. I wonder if he came up with porgs.
I don't think he came up with porgs. I'd be very surprised if he... I'd be very surprised if he did.
He came up with Ewoks.
He did come up with Ewoks, so maybe he did.
We don't know.
You're right. I just don't know. But, I do like that George Lucas still has you know, still has some say. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things where I'm kind of happy that he does, just because...
I mean, as long as he's not writing a script or behind the camera, we should be fine.
Even then, like, I'd be okay if he wrote, like, a script and then someone went through and cleaned it up.
Oh, and, like, helped him out. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you know, like, so, you know, someone did that. Like, I'm okay with it. Yeah. But, you know, it's what it is. Like, I'm okay with... Like, here's the thing is George Lucas created the whole thing, and...
Yeah.
If you look at, like, the original trilogy, and people may get mad at me for this, if you look at the original trilogy, A New Hope is one of my favorite stories because it's the hero's journey. But even then, New Hope is pretty campy, and there's some stuff, and that's the one that was written and directed by George. After that, you know, he has writing credits, you know, on, you know, episode 5 and 6, but he didn't actually write the script completely, and he also didn't direct it, so, that, you know, there's some things there.
I think his are more heavily towards, like, story credits rather than writing...
Yeah, so, and then credits, you have,
yeah,
because, you know, you, and then when you look at, you know, like Lawrence Kasdan, you know, did Empire and stuff like that, and we have him for the Han Solo film and whatnot, but when you look at, like, the prequels, that was, like, all him, and of course, Star Wars had become this huge thing, you know, my dad's like, oh, I bet you he was surrounded by a bunch of people, yes, guys, and no one gave him any criticism, so he just kind of went with it, and I think the stories of the prequels, like, the mythos of, like, Danya hates this, and I'm kind of glad she's not here so I can talk about it, but, like, I love the idea of, like, I love the idea of midichlorians, you know, when it comes to, like, a force, like, a scientific reasoning behind it, so it's not, like, some faith-only based religion of the force, you know, and that, and I think that played in our episode last week when me and Caitlin were talking about, you know, Baze and Churrit specifically not being force sensitive, but believing in the force as a religion.
Yeah.
And, like, it's like, well, maybe maybe Churrit has, you know, 10 midichlorians. Do not say midichlorians are unnecessary. They make so much sense if you really dive into it. So right now, for those of you who are just listening, for those of you just listening, I completely just changed my train of thought because one of our Patreon Brax said midichlorians were unnecessary. And maybe in a way they kind of are. Maybe they are. But demystifying the force a little bit with midichlorians and kind of other things, like, it makes sense in the way of, like, trying to, you know, kind of evolve what the force is as a whole, especially when you have things like the prophecy of the chosen one, stuff like that. Like, by demystifying it doesn't tie it to just a religious aspect. So I see where it comes from. I will say the idea of midichlorians in the Phantom Menace was completely, like, sort of, I think you said it right, Ben. Is execution of it was kind of bad. So execution of the prequels was kind of bad in the sense that they're
but
not.
But I personally, I if I'm to pick one of the two trilogies story wise that I like, I would definitely pick the prequels over the originals, even though the script writing and directing wasn't.
And
strong.
You know what's really funny is a lot of people might call that blasphemy, but if you take a look at, like, the prequels as a whole, like, if you look at episode 1, 2, the Clone Wars series, episode 3, and even, like, Rogue One, because that's all prequel before, you know, and if anyone argues with me, go to prequel memes, you know, the subreddit, because that's all considered in the prequel memes, because that's all before the original trilogy. Yeah. Like, all that content is before the original trilogy. Like, I would say that prequel era, there's so much story that happened there. And I think
then
a lot
also,
of
it was, it's got a lot of the whole, like, I like the whole seed planting of the downfall of the Republic and, like, the rise of the Empire. The allegory kind of pays tribute to the whole, like, you know, Roman Empire versus, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on this. It parallels, hold on, I'm going to hate myself. Let me Google this. The fall of the Republic and the rise of the Empire in Rome. And how that works, like, in history, and, like, how it kind of mirrors that, but with lightsabers and blasters. I just think it's great.
With lightsabers and blasters, I like that.
I mean, come on. You can't get much better than that. And it's also the hero's fall from grace. Like, you feel bad for this kid, you know, and that's what makes the original trilogy so much more special, I think. It's like, you know, the redemption. Not only is it the hero's journey for Luke, but it's the redemption of the chosen one, which you didn't know was coming, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, I will say, I do find it interesting that, you know, that Lucas still has a say, though. Like, it's nice that he hasn't been just, like, completely given the boot as, like, a senile old man, if you will. Like, don't get me wrong, like, he might be a little bit of a senile old man, but I do like that he's still, you know, he still, you know, he still has some say.
He was also, he had creative kind of say in The Force Awakens too, right?
No, he didn't have creative say, but he had...
Did he have a credit for Force Awakens?
He had story credits.
He had story credits, okay.
Well, gotcha. He didn't have story credits. He had... What was it? It was at the end. It was based... Now I'm going to look it up on IMDb, but I feel like it was just created by... Like, Star Wars was created by him. Does that make sense?
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
So let's see what it says George Lucas on IMDb here. Yeah, based on the characters created by. That's what it was.
Okay.
All right. So yeah, so it's based on the characters created by. So that's what his credits are.
So he's kind of he's sidelined as sort of like a Gene Roddenberry with J.J. Abrams Star Trek, like characters created by, and that's about it. Yeah. Okay. Well, cool.
Although I will say it's really interesting. I just went to George Lucas' IMDb page, and there's all these Star Wars shorts that are fan-based films, including like Star Wars Exile that we talked about on this a year ago. And he's credited on all those.
Oh, nice.
Well, it is, because they're all based on the credits that he made, so like, it makes sense. Like,
that's awesome.
Oh, yeah, man. So it makes sense. Like, I get it. Anyway, moving on to our next bit of news. The next bit of news I actually am really excited about. So, we now have Star Wars Phasma. It's coming out soon. It'll be released September 1st, which is Force Friday, for all those who don't know. So, you can go ahead and get your... the new Force... the second Force Friday for The Last Jedi toys and everything. I may or may not be going to a Toys R Us to pick up some toys and...
I mean, The Last Jedi Lego sets come out, so...
I know. Gotta get those. Gotta get those Porg plushies.
yeah.
But I'm definitely gonna. Last Jedi stuff's coming out September 1st, as well as the Phasma book. So it's a 400-page novel that's coming out. I may be picking up an ebook or hardback. I haven't decided yet, or maybe just do an Audible version of it. We'll see. But it's coming out, and I'm really excited for it. So here is basically Del Rey has released the synopsis of it. Not Del Rey, Penguin Random House. They change who releases Star Wars books. But I'm going to read the synopsis. I just want to talk about it real quick, Ben. One of the most cunning and merciless officers of the First Order, Captain Phasma commands the favor of her superiors, the respect of her peers, and the terror of her enemies. But for all her renown, Phasma remains a virtually unknown as impassive expressive on her gleaming chrome helmet. Now, an adversary is bent on unearthing her mysterious origins and exposing a secret she guards as zealously and ruthlessly as she serves her masters. Deep inside the battlecruiser Absolution, a captured resistance spy endures brutal interrogation at the hands of the crimson-armored stormtrooper Cardinal. But the information he desires has nothing to do with the resistance or its covert operations against the First Order. What the mysterious stormtrooper wants is Phasma's past, and with it, whatever long-buried scandal, treachery, or private demons he can wield against the hated rival who threatens his own power and privilege in the ranks of the First Order. His prisoner has what Cardinal so desperately seeks, but she won't surrender it easily. As she wages a painstaking war of wills with her captor, bargaining for her life in exchange for every precious revelation, the spellbinding chronicle of the inscrutable Phasma unfolds. But this knowledge may prove more than just dangerous once Cardinal possesses it and once his adversary unleashes the full measure of her fury. So the reason I wanted to read that whole thing, just so everyone kind of was on the same page as we talk about it, is it introduces a new character called Cardinal, a crimson-armored stormtrooper, which I found interesting because we don't really know about, this Cardinal character. We know about the chrome-plated one, which is Phasma. The only thing I can think about with Cardinal is maybe it's one of the Praetorian guards that Snoke has.
I was actually just thinking that too.
That's the only thing I can think of.
The first thing that comes to mind is that, that or we have a new Stormtrooper costume to get our hands on. I don't know. Also, another thing, this is Journey to Last Jedi, right? This takes place between Force Awakens and Last Jedi?
Yeah, so this here takes place between Force Awakens and Last Jedi, which is like this is in between the timeline. Like it might happen because I know here's the thing. So let's stop
where does it happen?
So this happens in between Force Awakens and Last Jedi in between Phasma's time. So you have to understand, Last Jedi takes up place right after Force Awakens. Like, it picks up on the rock with... But you have to understand, when we're on the rock of Ahch-To, and we're looking at just the Republic's, or just the Resistance kind of story at that time. Does that make sense? Like, time is passing.
So this is something that happens while...
Yeah, because...
We're not watching.
Before because before this, the last that we saw with Phasma was... Her escaping
garbage
from
chute?
The... Yeah, garbage chute, right?
Yeah.
So that's what we have. So this is taking place after Starkiller Base is destroyed, before we see what happens to Phasma. So this right here... So what's interesting, like, for those who don't know, like, if you've read any of the Journey to the Star Wars, like, movies, like Journey to the Force Awakens, or in this case, the new Journey to the Last Jedi, my guess is the Journey to the Last Jedi is going to mirror a lot of the Journey to the Force Awakens kind of styling, in the sense that the few novels that are there are going to add to the experience of watching the movie, where you'll know some background stuff, but it's not going to go
ahead. But they're not, like, crucial.
It's not crucial, and if this is a Praetorian, you know, one of Snoke's Praetorian guards, it may be, like, there might be some animosity between Phasma and them while she's, like, talking to Snoke or something like that.
Yeah.
You'd be like, oh my gosh, you know what, you know, like, those who've read the book will know what is actually, what the meaning of that is, or they might be, like, a comment or something, but, like, that's it. So, like, so there won't be a whole lot. Like, it's not going to affect someone who's never read the Phasma novel. But I will tell you these things. Like, a good example is one of the Journey to the Force Awakens comics that we've talked about on the show multiple times, and was Donnie's favorite comic, was the one featuring Poe Dameron's parents, Shattered Empire. And that specifically has Shara Bay, you know, Poe's mom, and Luke Skywalker going on a secret mission to Empire territory to recover the, you know, Force trees that were previously on Coruscant that the Emperor had taken. Well, we know, at least we think we know, that the tree that Luke is looking at and the kind of gnarl that all the books are on, like, that could be the Force tree from, you know, from the Shattered Empire novels. Who knows? And actually, there's lots of theories going around about that. So, definitely, like, you don't have to have read any of these things, but they're definitely really good tie-ins. And Delilah Dawson, I'm a fan of her writing, so I'm kind of excited to see how the Phasma novel kind of pans out. And that's coming up pretty soon, you know, just at the beginning of September. Yeah, Ben?
Yeah.
Any other thing? Any thoughts on it? Any thoughts on the Phasma novel?
I'm scrolling down the page of the Phasma novel on it, and I'm just...
There's not a lot there, right?
Necessarily, yeah. This is crazy. Do we have, like, news of any other... It was the Phasma novel, and then there was one other... I think there's, like, a Princess Leia book, right? And then...
So what happens is... there's a couple different books that are coming out. Some of them are small companion books that are quick reads. The Princess Leia novel and the Phasma novel, I believe, are the two big novels that are coming out.
Okay.
That'll be novels. There'll be a couple other books, and there's obviously a bunch of comics and stuff.
I'm excited, then, because I don't know if you guys covered the Princess Leia novel in news, like, last week or whatever. But, like, why would they come out with a Princess Leia novel if she didn't have a major role in the next movie? So I'm really excited.
Oh, no, no. She's going to have plenty of stuff. So Journey to the Last Jedi. There's going to be a Luke Skywalker book again. The Legends of Luke Skywalker.
Luke Skywalker book will just be him sitting.
But you gotta remember, some of those are gonna be like the Journey to the Last Jedi, like, stuff is like they're small books, like they're kids' novels,
yeah,
and
that's
stuff
true.
Like that stuff. So here it is. So there's so the Phasma novel's there. Leia, Princess of Alderaan, is actually a young adult novel, so it'll probably be only a couple hundred pages.
Oh, okay.
The other adult novel will be Phasma's the adult novel and Canto Blight, which is a short story collection. And we briefly talked about it, is I'm kind of excited for the Canto Bite. Canto Bite, I guess? B-I-G-H-T? Not Blight, Bite.
It's a measurement of storage on an iPod, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Byte, gigabyte, gigabyte. Gosh, this is what happens when it's just you and me.
I know, this is a problem.
the Canto Bite novel is a collection of short stories, which reminds me of, if you've ever read any of the old Legends books, like Journeys... stories from Mos Eisley Cantina, you know, Bounty Hunter story. Like, there's a lot of different stories that were, like, short stories that were all collected together and released as novels. And they were released as a single novel, which was really fun. So I'm kind of excited to see what this one has. And the nice part about the Canto Bight one is, previously with Journeys to the Force Awakens, they released, oh, geez, like, the Crimson Corsair and, you know, a couple other books that were just, like, really short stories, but they're all individual books, which kind of annoyed me because I'm, like, $7 a pop for each one. This will be nice just to buy one book with all the stories. There's also the junior book, which is the Legends of Luke Skywalker. And then Young Reader, which is the leader named Leia, Power of the Force. And then one that I will be picking up is the big golden book, Tales of the Force. So that's a little baby book, which I'll pick up. There's also a comics.
Little baby book,
which I may be picking
up. Little baby book.
I know, right? And there's also two comics, the Captain Phasma comics, which will be four issues, which I definitely encourage people to pick up because the comics leading up to the Star Wars films were all really good. And then also Star Wars Adventures Volume 1. So those are all going to be, not everything will be released on the first, but a lot of it will be released on the first. The books will obviously be the first, but the comics will be, Captain Phasma will be released September 6th, 20th, October 4th, and October 18th will be the last one. If you wait till after October 18th, you should be able to get the full book of it all together as one, the trade paperback if you want. So that's what I'll probably end up doing if I can wait. If not, I'll probably just buy each comic one by one. Anyway, moving on to our next bit of news. Sorry, this is what happens when we get distracted. Thanks, Ben. The next bit of news is one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite bits of news that I saw because I'm unlike Danya. I am very optimistic about the Han Solo film. I don't know about you, Ben. But Ben, what's your feelings on the Han Solo film so far?
I don't know. I'm kind of with you on the optimism thing because, like, I was like that for Rogue One, and like I said before, Rogue One wasn't bad. I did enjoy it. Han Solo, I think the one thing that I'm still kind of hanging on is just the not Harrison Ford-ness of it.
I agree. Like, it's not Harrison Ford, but I'm optimistic. I assume positive intent in a lot of things. Right. I'm just that good of a guy. Anyway, but I will tell you this. I love that Ron Howard is the new director for the Han Solo film. I think it should have been this all the way from the beginning. Don't get me wrong. Like, Phil Miller and Chris Lord, like, I liked Lego Movie, but I was always kind of like, I love the Lego Movie. Yeah? And Batman Lego was good. And I was not as much of a fan of 21 Jump Street and 22 Jump Street. Like, I watched them purely because I wanted to see what they've done. So I was kind of a little nervous about it, but I was like, yeah, you know, we'll see. Cause, you know, I like Lando and, you know, Donald Glover's
Lando. That's true. I'm excited for Lando. Yeah. We didn't get Lando in Force Awakens. So, like, give us Lando.
No, we didn't. So I was happy that Donald Glover was doing Lando. So I was like, okay, it can't be too bad. It's, again, assume positive intent. But since Ron Howard has taken over and he's reshooting a bunch of stuff, I am so excited because the tweets that he's doing, and obviously, like, Lucasfilm is like, all right, like, you're a studio director. We'll let you kind of do your stuff. And the tweets are very reminiscent of J.J. Abrams' tweets, like, of the stuff that he does.
No,
J.J. Abrams, like, wrote, like, on a card about, you know, the charity, and it was on the same direct table from the Millennium Falcon, and everyone's like, oh my god, it's gonna be there, like, whether, you know. And of course we had the little spoof of it turning on and everything, which was really awesome. So Ron Howard tweeted again. It says, "The Empire looms large," and it's a picture of some panels, you know, of control panels with a Death Star laser controller's helmet, you know, the kind of the black helmet that swoops back that has an open face and everything.
Yep.
It's sitting right there. And so it looms large. Like, could the Death Star, the original Death Star from 1977 in their first film, A New Hope, be still under construction? You know, the one that we saw in Rogue One that destroyed not only Jedha, but also Scarif. Could this film be, you know, could it still have the Death Star? I'm okay with it. Like, this might be what causes Han to, you know, get those Imperial entanglements and drop the cargo that he was carrying for Jabba, you know, which sets up the whole death marker on his head. Who knows? But, you know.
Well, what if the Death Star is in this movie, then, like, Han doesn't know what it is, right? Because, like,
It's a moon.
Right, yeah, exactly. So, like, in A New Hope, he has not come across it yet, which means if they feature it in the movie in any way, he wouldn't. I feel like it would be like a side story.
Oh, it would be, and I don't think it'd be. I don't think it'd be. Yeah. So, like, here's the thing: it's like I honestly feel like. So I mentioned the J.J. Abrams like snaps or tweets that we've seen. Think about the table that we saw from the Millennium Falcon from J.J. Abrams. Think about how much of it played a role inside, you know, The Force Awakens. They didn't even play a game. You know, Finn accidentally turned it on,
right,
and then turned it right off. Like, it was super small. Imagine this, is the Millennium Falcon comes out after doing the Kessel run, and there's all these Star Destroyers around. You see inside the Death Star, and a shot of the Death Star, and them responding that a civilian ship has popped out. They all start responding to Han. Han drops all the cargo and he jets out of there. Like, that's it. So it's like a completely like,
yeah, so it's
nothing.
More like a,
it's like, yeah, so a, it's just there for the sake of being. Yeah, it's just a cameo, if you will.
Imperial like, cameo.
But it, you know, but it makes, but like it ties to like things like, it goes back to like the first line, you know, the line of from Obi-Wan saying, in my experience, there is no luck. Like, he was destined to go to the Death Star. He was destined to be the one to help destroy it. Like, you know, it, like all that, you know, him constantly being pulled to it. So I think it'd be something fun like that. Maybe not. Maybe I'm stretching too far, but I feel like it'd be pretty cool to say something like that. But the fact that he said the Empire looms large, you know, maybe it's just a, you know, a big Star Destroyer, but I think it's probably the Death Star, even if it's not complete or something.
That'd be cool.
That would be pretty cool. Yeah. So that's what he's got there. Now, this is something that you've posted, Ben, the next bit of news.
I'm half and, joking about this, but I think it's amazing.
Oh, no, you're not. No, you're not. I might have to make these at some point in time. But so for those of you who don't go to StarWars.com regularly, StarWars.com does have this amazing recipes category where you can make some really cool stuff, everything from Empire Nachos, which is one of their more recent postings, to something like Porg Potatoes, because porgs.
There's literally nothing to say about this other than please look at the recipe and make them yourself.
So I've always had a secret like wish to do a, you know, to do a cooking show because I love to cook. But so really here, just to give you an idea, the ingredients are 12 small creamer potatoes, so they're very tiny potatoes, a tablespoon of olive oil, a little bit of garlic powder, and salt. So basically what you do is you are going to go ahead and cook the potatoes, but shave off the front of the face, so they're kind of flat at the front of it. So you all put olive oil around the potatoes, salt and garlic them, and then you bake them. But then you're also going to need some dried seaweed sheets, black sesame seeds, and some sour cream. Obviously, eat them. But what you end up doing is you take... What you're going to do is you're going to use a toothpick and some other things. You're going to cut the eyes, nose, and mouth out of the seaweed sheets. Or the nose is going to be black sesame seeds, sorry. The eyes and mouth are going to be black seaweed, and then the nose will be the black sesame seeds. And then you'll take a toothpick to put dollops of little sour cream as the eyeballs, you know, as the pupils of it. And then you have little porgs that are potatoes.
It's amazing. I love seeing that these things are so, like, beloved, and the movie hasn't even come out. Like...
I almost want a porg to become like almost like a piranha, like, because if you look at the picture they have like two sharp teeth, like everyone's like, oh, the porgs are so cute, and it'd be like this rabid beast, don't let the porg touch you,
Python bunny or whatever.
Yeah, it's something that's, it's too cute that's scary, but no, I think the porg is gonna give BB-8 a run for his money.
I also think that maybe the Star Wars people were like, well, we need to give Star Wars fans a baby Groot.
A baby Groot. I don't know if they did that, but I'm okay with them doing.
Well,
like that.
I mean, I would have thought that. I'd be like, you know, Marvel's also Disney, and they'd be like, "What do Marvel fans love about Marvel movies?" And they're like, "Baby Groot." So, let's make our own.
Maybe that's what they did,
or maybe they needed smaller furry creatures for Chewie to be in charge of because the Ewoks haven't been around in a while. So,
I would love Ewoks to pop up in one of these films. Anyway, if someone was to make pork potatoes, please tweet me a picture because I might be insanely jealous.
Pork potatoes.
If I can convince my wife to let me make pork potatoes, I might do it too. But
I mean, you can really still eat them. You're not like wasting anything.
I know. Well, would you really want to eat them after you made them and they look that cute?
They're potatoes, yes.
Okay. Anyway, moving on to the last bit of news. The insanely influential Star Wars sourcebook and role-playing game are coming back. So back in the late 80s and early 90s, the Star Wars role-playing game and the source book, which had a ridiculous amount of information about stuff from the original trilogy. And you have to understand, like, during this time, like in 1987, when Western Games published these books, they were packed with adventures for fans to recreate. So, like, I don't know if you've done any type of RPG type role-playing game. But a lot of the details that it had in these books is what became canon. And actually is still canon today. Like, stuff about the ships, shielding, different alien species and stuff like that. In fact, this was something that Pablo Hidalgo talked about, like, him growing up playing with. And it became, you know, this is what got him his job, is these types of things. So guess what? These books are coming back for the 30th anniversary. Fantasy Flight Games is reprinting them. And I feel like the guys at JotoCast, Leo, Joe, if you guys are listening to this, you know, we might need to do a combined episode if we do a little role-playing game one day. I think it would be very, very fun. I know Evan wanted to do this at one point in time, and I think it just kind of fizzled out. But let's do it, guys. Let's do a little Star Wars role-playing game. I could be a Jedi, or maybe not. Anyway, what do you think about this, Ben? Sorry, I got distracted because I'm excited for these to come back.
So is this still only going to be like original trilogy info?
Yeah, it's just a republication. It's just a reprint.
Okay,
of the
gotcha.
Books
all right.
For the 30th anniversary,
that's a bummer,
of these books.
Because like, I want one for more than just the originals.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they'd go more, but this is just a.
It's just a reprint. So there's
it's just a reprint.
Different.
But yeah. You know, who knows if these become very popular, if like people buy the reprint pretty significantly, who knows if they don't work together to create a new one? Because it'd be awesome if they did something with like a. I don't know if they'll ever do a prequel trilogy one, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did a sequel trilogy one. You know, with all the new stuff and everything.
Yeah,
but
cool.
We'll see what happens. I'm excited for them to come back and maybe do a role-playing podcast at some point in time. Anyway.
That'd be awesome.
I know, it'd be fun, right? Anyway, moving on to the spotlight topic. So, we've had an amazing run on Star Wars Rogue One spotlights, and now we're moving on to none other than Jyn Erso. So, Jyn Erso, real quick. I know, right? Jyn's like the main
character.
We're
finally here.
We're finally here. You know, we did Cassian. We've done Baze and Churrit. We've done K2SO. You know, we've done all of them, which is great. So now we're here with Jyn Erso, which I'm excited for. So real quick, so Jyn, to give you an idea, so we learned about Jyn in a couple different kind of ways. Obviously, the Rogue One movie was. A big source of it, the Rogue One novel, same thing. We also learned about her in Catalyst, where she was born and what happened. We also saw her in Rebel Rising and in Star Wars Forces of Destiny. So there's a lot of little bits of Jyn that we've seen from different things. We also see her mentioned in Inferno Squad as being someone who was known. And those of you who don't know Inferno Squad, we're not going to get into today, but Inferno Squad does take place after the Death Star has been destroyed. So it takes place at the end of that, if you will. So Jyn has already passed away, but she is mentioned only in the novel as some of the characters that you follow know her. So Jyn has popped up in a lot of different ways.
That's crazy considering the movie's only like 8 months old.
I know, right? So there's
you know,
a lot of
they've
stuff.
Made a they've made a lot of they put a lot of effort into like implementing Jyn into canon really fast. Which is cool.
Yeah, well, yeah, so if you look at, like, so obviously she was in the movie, so before we get into, like, her character real quick, let's talk about that. So she was in Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, and she was also in the Star Wars Story novelization, so those are kind of one, if you will.
Yeah, right.
If you've watched the movie, you've kind of essentially read the novelization. The benefit of the novelization is it gives you kind of insight and personal thought of certain characters in certain scenes, which is nice, but you've heard Danya say she doesn't always agree with novelization. I'm like, but hey, novelization is considered canon also, so there's some aspects of it that I like.
But then Danya would bring up the whole how she does not consider what Cursed Child canon and like, you know.
Yeah, well,
the whole
I don't
turning
know
on and off the canon is yeah. But anyway, we'll,
yeah, so
we'll,
I get it.
We'll
you know, you got head canon also, but then she also shows up in Catalyst.
We love
which
you,
is,
Danya.
But she's also in Catalyst, which is obviously a Galen Erso novel. Which yes. I think I said. You know, if you read Catalyst before seeing Rogue One, it really brings a lot of gravity to what's happening and kind of why Galen is where he is and that message he sends to Saw and his daughter. You learn a lot about Jin in Rebel Rising, specifically some of her abilities and stuff like that. Like, we learn, like, her really, she's really good at forging documents and stuff, which is why she's imprisoned, which we see at the beginning of Rogue One. So there's a lot of little bits that we have there. And, of course, with Star Wars Forces of Destiny, the YouTube series, she has shown up in the Stranger novel, which, you know, which is there. So it's you know, Stranger, not novel, Stranger short story. So it's kind of nice to see her definitely have become a bigger part of, you know, the of Star Wars canon in a very short time. You're right. So, starting with that, Jin was actually born in a Separatist prison when her mom and dad were both captured on a planet that switched from Republic to, I guess, Separatist or Confederacy.
Yeah, it wasn't the Empire at that point.
It wasn't the Empire. It was the Republic. Yeah. It was the Republic versus the Separatists. I guess it was
the
Confederacy of planets. So yeah. So yeah. Basically, she was born in prison due to her father's refusal to use his intelligence and knowledge of kyber crystals to help the Separatists win their war against the Galactic Republic. Jin spent approximately 6 months in the care of her mother and the caretakers at the complex. So she was not even born on her father's planet or anything, but she spent most of her life until she went on the run on Coruscant when her father took a job working for the Republic. And so just backstory of this, and Ben, I don't know, did you read Catalyst, Ben, or no?
I did not.
So to give you some backstory of the Catalyst, from the Catalyst novel, Jin was born in the prison, and this was almost a turning point for Kaelin to kind of agree to kind of get her out and be safe. But what ended up happening is Krennic obviously manipulates a lot of different things to free, you know, Jin, her Lara, and Kaelin from prison, and convinces Kaelin to work for him in something called Project Celestial Power, which is using kyber crystals to generate power. He doesn't know what it's for. He thinks it's to, you know, basically bring clean energy to many, many worlds that need it, which is a good idea. But, you know, he later finds out that it's for, you know, the Death Star and stuff like that. So he's manipulated early on by Krennic.
Yeah, it didn't dawn on me that, like, I was like, his knowledge of kyber crystals, I was like, the Empire doesn't even exist. But then, like, you have that moment, I think it's an Attack of the Clones, right, where the Separatists are actually the ones who came up with the idea for the Death Star?
Yes and no. So the Separatists kind of are the ones. Yeah, so...
I mean, Sidious was still there.
But. Yeah, so you have to remember, Sidious is actually both sides of the... both sides of the coin here, which maybe that's a topic, but yeah. So the Death Star was actually designed by the Genosians. Was originally designed by Genosians, and the initial construction was started by the Genosians. But it's also one of those things where the Republic takes it over, and it's approved by committee and stuff like that. For the rebellion to fight, use against them, which obviously it's never done the war. You know, the battle ends, Order 66, the whole thing ends before it's completed. You know, it takes 20 years for the first, you know, the Death Star to actually get going. But yeah, so that's where Jin kind of comes from. You know, she's born in a prison, spends the rest of her life, you know, being part of her life on Coruscant and the care of her mother. And then, guess what? They go in hiding. Basically, her mom and dad run away because of Krennic and kind of realizing what, you know, Galen's knowledge is taught for. And that's where we see at the beginning of Rogue One. So a little bit about her life. She learns a little bit, kind of born in that. And then what happens is her mom is killed in front of her. You see this by Krennic, and she's raised by Saw Gerrera. So I do want to talk a little about her being raised by Saw Gerrera. First of all, she is, 6 years old at this time, you know, a super young girl. And she's being raised by someone who has fought in the Clone Wars, who is considered a terrorist by many. And has a hatred for the Empire. I think his hatred for the Empire obviously wears, you know, is taught to her, which I think she has a right to kind of hate the Empire and what it does because she sees her mother dead.
Right. Yeah. If she hadn't hated it before that, then she definitely did afterwards.
Yeah. She definitely. You know. So I can take that. I can take that from her. But being raised by someone like Saw Gerrera, can you imagine that, Ben? Like someone who is a rebel fighter, considered a terrorist, like. Yeah, I don't think it's any place for a girl. And actually, she comments on this in the movie when she sees him. You left me. He's like, I couldn't take you anymore. You're becoming a liability. Because at that point, it's been 10 years. He's taught her how to fight, how to shoot, you know, all these different things that I think I don't think anyone would want like a 6-year-old girl to know how to shoot a gun or a blaster, you know, stuff like that. But I get it. You know, it's a time of revolution and battle and stuff like that. So it's okay. But, or at least it's fictional. It's a story. So it's okay. But I had to clarify that. But, you know, right. But at the same time, like, I can't imagine it being a good environment for someone to grow up in. Especially when you see like, what Saw's, you know, base, you know, his partisans base on Jeddah. You know, it's not really clean. There's a bunch of guys who are, you know, would surround her. She would grow up with a bunch of like, essentially like, you know, warriors. And, you know, she would have a very skewed point of view of certain things, which obviously we see it come to light in Rogue One. So what do you think about her just being raised by Saw, Ben?
I like comparing it to like, I don't know, just, I'm trying to pin down the exact analogy, but like, you know how like, for example, Tarzan has all these really cool abilities, but like he was raised in the middle of the jungle by a bunch of apes. You know, I'm thinking like, it's like, you know, Saw Gerrera is this person who's clearly not fit to like raise a kid at the point that he has to take Jin under his wing, but he does anyway, and she comes out with all these really cool abilities that she wouldn't have had otherwise. So maybe that's a positive spin on it. I don't know.
I feel like you're comparing it to like a video game almost, like ability A, B, C.
Right.
She put 20 power points in like into forgery, 30 power points into, you know, accuracy and shooting.
Yeah, you know, but like, let's say hypothetically that like, you know, the Empire never found like her parents. Would she have learned how to defend herself and all this kind of stuff? Because like
she probably would have learned how to farm because they were farming on the planet.
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess you're right. Like, you know,
like the
she learned some very important life lessons, I guess.
Yeah.
By
well, just had to like be self sufficient, I guess. Because like by the time we meet her, as played by Felicity Jones. She's very much like, you know, I'm in charge of me because I've been alone for so long and I can take care of myself, like that kind of stuff, which I don't think she would have turned into unless she had been with Saw Gerrera.
That's true. I think Saw kind of set up her whole, you know, obviously as a turning point when she went on the run, her parents, for in all intents and purposes, her parents were both dead. Galen, you know, was taken away from her and she never saw him again until he died. So yeah, so I get that. Like, definitely Saw Gerrera and his influence on her made her who she was in the film that we see it. But we did talk about that she didn't see her father again till the attempted rescue on Edu, which is funny because it wasn't really a rescue.
It was supposed to be
an assassination, right?
Yeah, right.
So let's talk about Let's talk about her relationship with her father. Obviously, it's been strained since she last saw him more than 15 years go by, and she doesn't see him until the very end of his life. But obviously, she doesn't hold anything against him. You know, like her goal was to go and save him.
Whereas, and I think it's because she also like the confrontation right at the front of the movie. Like she saw what he tried to do, and that it didn't work as far as like bluffing and you know covering up the fact that. You know, like his wife was, because doesn't he lie to Krennic at the very beginning, like Lyra's dead or whatever? And then Lyra comes out of nowhere and he's like, what the heck, you lied to me. And then they see through him right then and there. But he also gives Jin reason to trust him because, like, they put all the effort into, like, oh, his pet name for her is Stardust. And, like, she has his necklace that has, what, a Kyber crystal on it, right? And,
yeah.
You know, it's just like, you know, he clearly, you know, loves her, cares about her, and there's a very important relationship there. And so even if we don't see a lot of that developed relationship, we know that it exists.
Mm-hmm.
So that way we understand why she's, like, okay with not holding anything against Galen. And even in that scene where she sees the hologram, of him when he's talking about how he's discovered, you know, what the Death Star actually is and all this kind of stuff, you know, she like is so overwhelmed with seeing him for the first time and however long it had been. I think that relationship is well established, even if we don't see how it was established.
And you don't see it grow and just kind of what it is.
Yeah.
So she has a relationship with K2, Cassian, Baze Ventura, and Bodhi. You know, these are the characters we've been talking about these past couple weeks. And Jin kind of has a relationship with all of them. And I don't think we need to focus on individual relationships too much. We might a little bit. But thinking back to this, she's kind of guarded between all of them. You know, she has this...
Yeah.
You know, when she's introduced to someone like K2SO, you know, it's... She's essentially hit by him because she tries to make an escape and knocked over. And, you know,
it's a new definition of being hit on.
Right? Because just whack right there.
It's just like, I'm rescuing you. That's the pickup line.
Yes. I'm rescuing you. Exactly. In that monotone voice. So yeah, obviously, right. You know, her relationship with K2 starts off a little, I guess, troubled, if you will, because she never actually, you know, a little rocky, a little hard hitting, if you will. But as it goes through, you can see that it kind of almost defines, like, her relationship with K2 almost defines his personality. You know, we see a lot of K2's personality come out between his relationship with Jin. Specifically, just comes to mind, you know, you talk about, obviously, the very first scene that we see Jin and K2SO in, when they go to Jeddah, he drops her bag. We go to, you know, she ends up hitting the detonator back and it blowing up, or she shoots a security droid, and then he asks, "Do you know that wasn't me?" And she goes, "Yes," kind of like.
Yeah,
so, right, like a lot of that is there. And then you see, like, the relationship with him even changes, because at the end of the movie, she gives him a gun, a blaster, right before, you know, obviously, which, you know, is like, oh gosh, this is going to be bad if he has a blaster now. And it leads to the end of his, you know, end of K2SO. But he even mentions, like, you're always surprising me. Like, it has definitely changed. And she's become, you know, a better person for it, if that makes sense. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, that totally makes sense.
So, you know, K2, I think with K2, she has a really big character arc in kind of development of distrusting someone to joining a group with a common goal to actually putting faith in someone else. Like, the fact that she gave him a blaster, like, she really distrusted K2 completely, like she did towards the beginning of the film, she would never give him a blaster, because for all she knows, he would just shoot her in the face with it.
And I think that's sort of a common thread for her, is like, she does not have any reason to trust anyone, and so, like, part of her character arc in Rogue One is developing trustworthiness in the people around her, because they're all going for a certain cause.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's also... I think she's also broken, not only because she saw her mother murdered and her, you know, and she's raised by, you know, essentially a terrorist, or, you know, this kind of guerrilla warfare person, Saw. But even when she is reunited with Saw, you know, he doesn't trust her. He's convinced that she has turned on him.
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't have anything to do anymore. I'm done. Like, she's spent, you know, growing up the way she did. Like, that's kind of where, you know, she's at the end of her rope there.
Yeah.
So, you know, she's a broken character who steps up to go ahead and do a pretty significant amount. Obviously, she finds a cause that she believes in, and the cause that she believes in is completing what her father started. You know, she has, with Jin, I don't think she ever regretted going to Scarif, giving her life for the cause. Whereas you have someone like Cassian, who told her, like, I've been in this fight since 6 years old. Like, he's like, I'm willing to do this because I've been doing it. Where she just had, like, a switch turned on to her. And I think it's okay that the switch just turned for her, because she was not fighting just for the rebellion, but fighting to complete what her father started. And I think that is, you know, when it comes to seeing her father at the end, or at Edu, when they try to, you know, when she tries to save him, like, that right there is the turning point of her just like, yeah, my father still loved me. And just like you mentioned, you know, the code name for Death Star was, you know, Stardust, which is what her father called her. You know, she has the Kyber crystal on. And then even, like, her relationship with Baze and Churrit, specifically Churrit. I don't know how much of a relationship she has with Baze, other than if Baze is more just along for the ride because he's hanging out with Churrit. But, like, with someone like Churrit, who sees her in the crowd and talks about the Kyber crystal that's on her neck. You know, that, you know, again, without getting into, like, does he have use of the Force? Can he sense it? Does he have a little bit of midichlorians to be able to communicate with it? Again, midichlorians are useful for this. But like, but the fact that there's a relationship there, and she kind of is like, she's not trusting of him from the beginning. And I think even in the end, she's not completely trusting, but she believes in him. And I think it's because he believes in her and believes in the cause. Does that make sense?
And also, I feel like he's probably one of the first people ever to like just kind of openly be like, yeah, I believe in you. And she's like, oh, that feels good. You know,
being part of a team and a group.
Yeah.
And it's like, and obviously,
it's like she's played golf her whole life and now she's on a soccer team or something, you know?
When she's like, I like soccer.
Yeah. Soccer, Rera.
So, I see what you did there. And soccer and Guerrera.
See, I was a little upset at the lack of puns on this episode because I realized we probably fill them with puns because Danya's here, but she's not here. So it's really sad.
I know, so we don't have to do that to get her mad. Sorry, Danya. Anyway. So, Jin and Cassian, I want to talk about them a little bit, and specifically maybe not about their relationship, because we examined that when we talked about Cassian. But I do want to talk about them both going on this mission. You know, I mentioned earlier that Cassian talked about he was in this since 6 years old. And in the end of Rogue One, kind of, you know, Jin's story, if you will, she is ready to kind of give her life to complete her father's mission, to be able to get the information about the Death Star out. Because she saw the destructive power. She saw it at Jeddah, which is interesting, in Inferno Squad, even after the Death Star is destroyed, we learn that Jeddah has been covered up. Like, the destruction of Jeddah is considered a mining accident. So the only people that knew that it was actually the Death Star that destroyed Jeddah City were the people that were there that made it out. So, you know, Jin, Cassian, K2, Baze, Churrit, Bodhi, and then those who were on the Death Star, which, after the Death Star is destroyed, there's only a handful of people that survived the Death Star. So, not many people know that Jeddah was actually destroyed by the Death Star. Most people think it's a.k.a. mining accident, which is what the Empire puts it out as. So, her and Cassian kind of take the lead on the battle in Scarif, where they go through, they sneak in with Bodhi in the cargo ship, with the call sign Rogue One, which is, I think, awesome that they got to use that, which is maybe why the title is what it is. But they sneak in, and obviously they leave the rest of the people around to be the diversion for them. And with taking K2 along with them, they have the capability of being able to sneak in, and they have a very slight, you know, percentage of being successful, and obviously they are successful in what they do. But they go through.
Usually, when a droid gives you the odds, even though they're very stacked against you, you'll be okay. That's what I've learned from watching Star Wars.
I don't know. I just need to have like Siri or something. Like, whenever I want to do something, it's like, Siri, what are the odds of me being able to do this? And they just give me a random number and be like, awesome, I'll do it. But no, like, I agree. Like, something will, like, they go in and they, you know, they're pretty much like undetected all the way till almost the very end, right?
Yeah.
When the stormtroopers come in and we see K2's like kind of like last stand, if you will. And they're kind of, you know, like really like they're compared to like everyone else who's battling on the beach, Bodhi calling in fake, you know, locations for stormtroopers to go to. Like they're pretty like they have a pretty clear like path for the most part. Where they run into problems is after K2 is dead and them accessing the plans. That's when Krennic and his goons kind of show up, and K2 is dead, and they're trying to come through, and there's
Krennic
no way...
Krennic and the goons,
that should be a
that
band.
That just needs to be a band. It needs to be a band. Krennic and the goons.
Star Wars government. Krennic and the goons.
Yep. Absolutely.
As they kind of go through, there's no way around from them, so they just do what they can do, is they run for it. And I think it's really cool, because if you watch any of the making of Rogue One, they talk about how they talked about being able to really match what happens in Rogue One to what they know about the plans in A New Hope. So, one, they had to take a physical hard drive, like a physical plans, right? Because in A New Hope,
Princess Leia has them, right?
Well, no, not Princess Leia has them, but because in the round table where you see Vader, Krennic, or Vader, Tarkin, and Vader does the choking scene.
Oh, right.
You know, in A New Hope, he says, the line is, and don't quote me 100% because I'm going off memory right now and I didn't pull it up, but they kind of mentioned that, your faith in that hokey religion hasn't helped you recover the stolen data tapes. So they mentioned data tapes.
Oh, gotcha. That's because it was the 70s.
So sad. So in the 70s, because someone mentioned data tapes, they had to do that. And then also, you had earlier than that, you saw Vader mentioned something like, you received a transmission. So when they talked about, when Gareth Edwards talked about reshoots and stuff like that, what happened was they originally were going to do, Jyn was going to steal the data tapes, and then she was going to run all the way across to where the tower was to submit a transmission, which is that's why there was the reshoots, and if we can just make it all in one. Mm-hmm. Because it was just too slow pacing of okay, they've done all this. Now they need to go over here to do it. Because they had to steal data tapes like what they did in that room where K2 died. And then they had to submit it, do something to transmit it somewhere. Specifically to the ship that gets to Princess Leia. Because they were kind of tied into a corner because of what was mentioned in A New Hope. So it's really interesting. And I think they did it well. Because by her stealing the data tape and the tension that you have there, because that's where she loses Cassian. Cassian gets shot and falls down. Well, he doesn't get shot. The data tapes get hit and Cassian falls, which we think he's dead. She climbs up, and of course there's a showdown between her and Krennic. And what's interesting is Krennic doesn't recognize her. And I think it's poetic justice, if you will, that she comes face to face with Krennic. And he asks her, "Who are you?" And you don't, and she's like, "You don't even know." And it was just—it's just one of those things where he had been searching for her for years, using her as kind of a way to kind of squeeze her father's, twist her father's arm, if you will, for him to go ahead and continue working on the Death Star. And the fact that he doesn't even know who she is, which is why he could never find her. Obviously she's really good at forging documents and, going by fake names and stuff like that. But the fact that there's a showdown right at the very end, and of course, Cassian comes to save the day, which is awesome. He rides in with this blaster blazing and shoots Krennic. So, I don't know. I feel like the whole thing of her stealing those data tapes and everything just really add to her character, completing of it, and just kind of overcoming, immersible odds, in crazy odds, to be able to complete this and kind of save the day, if you will. Because without her and her, her father's note or transmission to her, to Saw, and her kind of going against, kind of rebellion, if you will, I rebel, there wouldn't have been, the Death Star plans. We wouldn't have had A New Hope. It would never happen. So thank you, Jyn.
So thank you, Jyn.
Thank you, Jyn. Thank you. So I do want to read one last thing, and we can just kind of use that as the cap off to talk about Jyn.
I think it's a good cap off. I like this quote.
I know. I saw it was there. So I want to talk about it real quick. It's from Mon Mothma. "Jyn, I think, never knew the effect she has on others, never realized the intensity of her own humanity or the presence she brought to a room. She was, as expected, troubled and quarrelsome. She was also impossible to ignore or forget." And I think that really defines Jyn Erso, and I think that's why it was really difficult. For me, when I said she steals the data tapes, climbs up, and comes face to face with Krennic, that is a pinnacle of the film, of Rogue One, for me. And I've watched it, having a baby, being up at 3-4 in the morning, watching Rogue One. It's one of those things where, Jyn Erso has become one of my favorite characters. And that's why I love that they've added so much for her in canon. And I would just, with Anakin Skywalker and other characters who are officially gone, who died, whatever, I would love for more stories to kind of come out. And even in Inferno Squad, where you have, I won't spill it, but we have someone from the Clone Wars, Saw Gerrera is in Inferno Squad, who knew Jyn Erso. It's nice to see her weaved into other things that are canon. So I would love for more and more of that to happen and us to kind of experience that. Any last thoughts on Jyn Erso, my friend Ben?
No, I think that was thorough.
Thorough on what we have so far. Maybe in 2-3 years, if there's more about Jyn Erso, we can revisit her.
Else, yeah,
we can revisit it. Who knows? Anyway, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Please feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. You get access to all the episodes super early, if I remember to post them, which I usually do. As always, I'm Mikey B.
And I'm Ben.
And may the Force be with you.
And also with you. It's only me. Wow. That's really, still really sad. Whatever. Bye-bye.